Good evening. Welcome to tonight's shiur on cooking on Yom Tov. So before we get into the practical applications of Yom Tov, which is coming up very soon, we have to have an overview of the halachos from the psukim to the gemaras, and then after we do that, we'll get into all the practical applications in terms of ovens, in terms of opening ovens, closing ovens, cooking, what I can cook, when I can cook, having a guy help me cook. That will be after we get the basics down. So let's start with the basics in terms of cooking on Yom Tov. First of all, it's very apropos to talk about cooking on Yom Tov in the context of Pesach, more than any other Yom Tov. Because by all the Elim Tovim, the Pasuk says you can't do Malacha. And only on Pesach does it say the key line for Hilchas Bishul B'Yom Tov, Ach Asher Yachel Achol Nefesh, Hu Levado Yasel Achem, which is a source that you could make Achol Nefesh. That's what the Mishnah tells us, that there's no difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov except for this distinction of Ochol Nefesh, which we will spend the rest of tonight for the next hour or so figuring out what are the parameters of Ochol Nefesh, how far we could take it from Ochol to other things, and that's going to be the pasuk that starts us off. The pasuk says, whatever you need, L'chol Nefesh, Hu Levado Yaseh Lachem, for yourselves. That pasuk tells us one very important limitation that can be very halacha l'maisa when you want to have guests for Pesach. I got an interesting shayla this week, sensitive shayla, because I deal with a population in school that their families are generally not religious. In some cases, part of their family is not Jewish. So this specific shayla that I got this week was a gentleman whose father is not Jewish, whose mother is Jewish, and he was asking me, I assume he knew that I knew, But he was asking me, oh, could you cook for a non-Jew on Yom Tov? So, given that I knew his situation, I said, oh, there's no problem serving. Could you have a non-Jew at the Seder? And I knew that his father wasn't Jewish. So I told him, sure, of course you could have a non-Jew at the Seder. Just make sure that you don't cook for a non-Jew on Yom Tov, meaning everything that you serve, in his case, all of his food, if his father's going to be participating with him over Yom Tov, all the food has to be cooked before Yom Tov entirely, because you're not allowed to cook. The heter is Ochol Nefesh, Ye'asel Achem, for you, and therefore it can only be cooked on Yom Tov for a Jew, and therefore this gentleman whose father is not Jewish, his father could join him and sit at the Seder and drink the wine and do his Seder or not do his Seder. He won't have to go back if he didn't do his Seder, but he will not be able to be cooked for. That's one category. Another category of people who aren't Jewish are people who aren't people. For example, animals. Just as one, I'm not in any way equating these two categories, the focus is only on that it's only for cooking for a Jew that's permitted, and therefore an animal who is not a Jew is not able to be cooked for. It is true, I remember actually a Rosh Yeshiva here was once telling me that he was in shul, and there's a whole shaila if you could bring dogs are not supposed to be brought into shul. And there's a shaila about seeing eye dogs. And there's a certain one of our Rosh Yeshiva who said that he was a certain place and he saw there's a blind man and the seeing eye dog was helping him. And the Rosh Yeshiva felt that this seeing eye dog probably had a Jewish neshama or something like that. So despite that, it could be a very Jewish dog, but still not Yasel Achem, and therefore I assume even for a seeing eye dog, one would not, as is cited in the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Yom Tov, Tav Kuf Yud Beis, 5:12. See if Aleph talks about only for Jews and not for people who are not Jewish, and then in Sif Gimel, again an unrelated halacha but coming from the same source, also levash of le'afos, letzorech klavim, for animals, despite the fact that it is permitted and perhaps even obligatory for a person to, of course, feed his animal, his or her animals. This could be important if you have a non-Jewish maid or I have a bunch of students from South America, and they have at least one, if not two or three, and sometimes even more maids. There's the maid who does the laundry, there's the maid who's in charge of cooking, there's the maid who drives them wherever they have to go, and then there's the maid who just takes care of the kids. And I guess that's life in certain countries in South America. So there, the maid often lives in the house. We also have live-in maids in certain circumstances, and they're what food are they going to eat? You don't want them cooking here with your Pesach dishes, so they're going to be cooking. No, so you could serve them food. However, of course, they could eat whatever you cook before Yom Tov. The Shulchan Aruch says, on Yom Tov, if you're cooking already, then as long as you don't do an extra action on their behalf, for example, let's say you want to make kreplach on Yom Tov. So every kreppel that you make is a little bit of a tircha, an extra 30 seconds of putting the meat in the dough, pinching the sides, throwing it into the pot, that extra 30 seconds I need for the extra kreplel, doesn't sound good, singular. Let's just talk about every kreplach, that doesn't work either. That will not be okay. If you just want to put in a larger amount, instead of putting in, instead of putting in three tomatoes, you put in four tomatoes, I think that will be okay, whatever stew you're making, or you put in five potatoes in the chalms instead of four potatoes in the chalms, since there's no additional action there involved, I think that will be okay. But we're not going to go into those specifics of how the halachos work in terms of if there is a non-Jew. Again, you can't, so therefore, the Shulchan Aruch rules, you cannot invite a non-Jew to a meal. If there, however, is a non-Jew who either crashes or who is part of the household because they work with you or for you, whatever the situation might be, then it is permitted to let them eat, certainly, and even to do whatever you're doing in a larger quantity, but not with extra actions involved, not with extra tircha involved. That will be because of the pasuk of Ochel Nefesh, Yaseh Lachem, to you and not anyone but a Jew. That's the first category that we have to talk about in terms of cooking on Yom Tov. That's only for a Jew. Second parameter, second discussion, is how far are the parameters of Ochel Nefesh? Let me explain to you what I mean with the following Gemara. The Gemara in Beitza, Daf Chaf Aleph, writes, Machlokas b'shamay b'shilel, whether or not you're allowed to warm up hot water to wash your feet. Nowadays, we're not so into feet washing, we're more into hands and face washing, which is the same as what they used to be into feet washing. We're not into feet washing because we don't wear sandals and we don't live in the Negev. We wear shoes that are closed, and therefore our toes don't get so dirty, but our hands and our face certainly do get dirty. And therefore, this machlokas b'shilel and b'shamay, if on Yom Tov, if one is permitted to warm up water to wash their hands, face, feet. Oh, that's all one category. Why is there machlokas? What are they arguing about? So the Rambam in the Perasha Mishnayos on that halacha says something very fundamental as far as why would Beis Shammai say that you're not allowed to warm up water to wash your feet, and Beis Hillel says you are allowed to. The Rambam writes, and listen carefully, the machlokas Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is how far does the heter of ochel nefesh, when we say the word ochel nefesh, food, does that mean any physical enjoyment that you want to derive any malacha for that is prohibited, or we mean ochel, food, nothing more than food. Says the Rambam, that's this machlokas. You know why Beis Shammai says you're not allowed to warm up water to wash your face on Shabbat, on Yom Tov? We, of course, pass like Beis Hillel. Why does the Rambam say you're not allowed to wash your face on Yom Tov? You warm up water, I'm sorry, to wash your face? If you have water that's heated from before, of course you can wash your face with that water. But why on Yom Tov are you not allowed to warm up water? Because Beis Shammai understands that we're only permitted to do ochel nefesh. Anything beyond ochel, even though it's a physical pleasure, like washing your body, which we know on when there's the chamisha inuim of Tisha B'Av and of Yom Kippur, that is a considered physical pleasure to of rechitza, that's asra on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur, when there's a din inui, for an avil as well. Nevertheless, here, Beis Shammai holds that that's not what the pasuk talks about. The pasuk talks about food. This isn't food. The heter is for food. This is not food. There's no heter to warm up food, to warm up water for non-food purposes. Beis Hillel, says the Rambam, says no. The pasuk is telling you ochel, as ochel is just the paradigm of what's the paradigm of physical pleasure. So ochel, of course, and anything else that's not similar to ochel, where the body gets enjoyment. So therefore, Beis Hillel, which is how we pass, and says you are allowed to warm up water in order to wash your face and your hands. What did I just finish saying? Your face and your hands. What about your whole body? That's clear, and here I don't want to scare anybody, but just hear me out for another 2.5 minutes, perhaps. Here, the Shulchan Aruch does actually say that you're not allowed to warm up water for your whole body. That's, for some reason, a different category, which we'll get to in a moment. In other words, to warm up water for your hands, your face, your feet, that's okay. To warm up water for your whole body, otherwise known as a bath or a shower, that, we'll see in a moment, is not okay. What's the difference? You're doing an act, if you hold like Beis Hillel, that it's not just food, it's also any other physical pleasures, like washing, so why hands, face, feet, yes, whole body, no? So for this, we have to go to another Gemara. The Gemara tells a story about somebody who wanted to light a fire not for food, who wanted to light a fire not to have warm heat in their house or even warm water to wash their body in, but to light mugmar. If I'm not mistaken, mugmar is a kind of incense. Do you ever go on like Grand Central Station, 42nd Street, you know, the Port Authority Station? There's always like people selling incense there. Is it still there? I haven't been on the trains in a while. You guys take it every day, yes? No one knows what I'm talking about. Mayor Bloomberg has been so effective, what? They still sell it, right? Okay, so the guy's selling incense in the train station. And that's not just her, right? Maybe it's just on LIRR. I think that's what mugmar is, I'm not sure. And are you allowed to light that on Shabbos? On Yom Tov, I mean? I could light a fire. Let's not talk about the word light. We'll talk later about I could use a fire to have something lit so that there could be food, hot water. What about mugmar for incense? So here, that's not really a physical pleasure. I mean, it smells good, but I don't know if that's considered halakhically a physical pleasure. So here the Gemara says, hey, we have this concept of once something is mutter for whatever necessary purpose, like ochel, we're going to be matir that same action for non-ochel purposes. And therefore the Gemara suggests, so maybe mugmar, this incense, should also be permitted to light. Once I'm allowed to light, so don't tell me I'm allowed to light here, I'm not allowed to light there, I'm allowed to have a fire here, I'm not allowed to have a fire here, I should be able to have a fire anywhere, right? Concludes the Gemara with two very important words, maybe more than two. The Gemara concludes that the only thing that's permitted is ochel nefesh. Ochel nefesh. Ochel that's shaveh l'chol nefesh. Something that's unanimous, that everybody feels, that everybody agrees to. It's a pleasure that is like food, for example, where everybody likes food. Is everybody into incense? Is everybody into scented candles? Who here has bought a scented candle in the past year? No one. Okay, fine, you can tell me afterwards. I don't want to embarrass anybody. So it's clear that if not nobody, but at least not everybody is into scented candles, into incense. So therefore it's not shavu l'chol nefesh, it's not a unanimously agreed upon pleasure that the body enjoys or needs. And therefore, the Gemara concludes, you will not be able to light this incense because yes, it is lighting, and you could light for other things, and it is some kind of enjoyment, but it's not shavel, it's not ochel nefesh, and the Gemara understands it has to be shavel ochel nefesh. So then there's equal across the board, everyone enjoys it. With that, we could understand the distinction that the Shulchan Aruch makes, that we mentioned a moment ago. What's the difference between your washing your entire body, taking a full body bath or shower, as opposed to washing your face and your hands? And here again, bear with me for a minute. Everybody needs to wash their hands and face, right? Everyone gets a little dirty, a little sweaty, whatever it is, so you wash your body, you wash your hands or your face. But is it a unanimous thing that everybody needs on a daily basis to wash their entire body? Okay, so there, for many generations, in fact, almost all of history, until we've reached our mifunakim status that we are all today, of istinuses and mifunakim, and I'm not calling anyone spoiled, certainly before they had, I was just thinking this week, yesterday or 2 days ago it was cold, right? And my building, the boiler broke, and there was no hot water for a few hours. What did they do for like the past, I don't know, like 5,680 years before they had boilers in the basements that gave you hot water? What did they do for like all of the winter? Like for 5 or 6 months? Did you ever try to take a freezing cold shower? It works during like July and August. But like during February, when you don't have, you know, central heat and you don't have heaters, you don't have those infrared things on the ceilings. So it's not so easy. So what did people do for most of history? People did not take showers every day, certainly not during certain parts, you know, when it's not hot outside. And for most of history, therefore, there was a gigantic distinction between washing your face, your hands, your feet, as opposed to washing your whole body. Washing your hands and face, everybody, you know, you wake up in the morning, you wash your feet, you rinse your face off, you wash off if you're a little dirty, your feet get full of sand between your toes, so you rinse that off. But your whole body, that was not a need that was unanimous, that everybody needed it on a daily basis. And therefore, washing the entire body was not a davar hashavah l'chol nefesh. It was not something that everybody needed equally, and saying that it's a need or a desire for everybody on a regular basis. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch makes the distinction that on Yontif, if you are permitted, halal, we pass on like Beis Hillel that I mentioned 5 minutes ago, who says that you're allowed to warm up water to wash your hands, feet, face. But, says the Shulchan Aruch, you're not allowed to warm up water. You cannot turn on the hot water faucet in your showers to take a bath or a shower for this reason. Now, as I think we might all intuit or feel or sense or scream ever so quietly, perhaps nowadays it has shifted. Nowadays that we all have our bathrooms like within, you know, 20 feet of our bedrooms, it has become a common thing to shower, for regular people on a regular basis to shower quite often, in fact, perhaps even every day. And that perhaps it could be argued that it is a shavei lechol nefesh. Keep in mind, that's against the Gemara, that's against the Mishnah. Keep in mind, that's against the Shulchan Aruch, but nevertheless, times have changed. One could argue, make that argument. We're not going to talk about showering on Yontif, because that's a different topic, and I wanted to leave myself time to give a different shiur, maybe before Shavuot, about showering on Yontif. But, at least in terms of presenting the arguments, there are other arguments in both directions, but perhaps one could suggest that, at least in terms of heating up the water, perhaps nowadays, I'm not saying yes, I'm not saying no, it might be shavei lechol nefesh, and therefore, even though in the time of the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, it was also to heat up water to take a bath or shower, in other words, to turn on the faucet, perhaps nowadays one could argue it's ismutter. Well, let's take something that's the opposite flip. What is something that for all of history everyone did do and everyone liked, and now maybe is less so? Smoking, 100%, exactly. For the past, I don't know, 100 to whatever it is, probably more than 100 or 200 years, people smoked and everyone enjoyed smoking. And therefore, the discussion in the post-gim is whether or not smoking is considered shavei lechol nefesh or not shavei lechol nefesh. Is it something that everybody enjoys, that only the men do, or the women also? But what do the post-gim and the more recent post-gim discuss? More recent meaning since the Surgeon General came out with it about, not so long ago, 40 years? When did the Surgeon General come out that smoking is hazardous to your health? 40 years ago, maybe. I don't even think 50. So since that time, and people, A, don't want to smoke and are sometimes, it's just disgusting to smell the smoke, and people are against smoke and smoking. So it's definitely, certainly not shavei lechol nefesh. So even the poskim who 100 years ago might have all said, yes, smoking is something that is shavei lechol nefesh, and therefore you'd be able to take the fire from the pilot light and light up a cigarette, even if that was okay 100 years ago, perhaps, and again, this is a gigantic discussion in the post-gim, and I don't advise you to ask the shaila because you shouldn't smoke for other reasons, but this is the shaila of going the opposite direction. What used to be shavei lechol nefesh, perhaps, is now definitely not shavei lechol nefesh, and therefore perhaps the halacha should change, and even if it were permitted to smoke 100 years ago, perhaps now, because it is very, there's certainly a significant minority, if not a majority, of people who dislike smoking, and that would make it usher to light up a cigarette, even if 100 years ago it was considered shavei lechol nefesh. So what we just demonstrated is two points. We said that for something to be mutter to do on Shabbos, in order to light a fire, in order to do a malacha, not on Shabbos, on Yontif, they have to have two criteria that are met. A, it has to be for a Jew, as opposed to somebody who's not a Jew or something that's not a Jew. And B, that pleasure that's being derived, that forever you're doing this malacha, has to be something that is shavei lechol nefesh, that everybody is into. Like food, like washing parts of your body, certainly, and all the rest will be either a shaila or not permitted. Okay. Those were the introduction to malacha on, that was the introduction to malacha on Yontif. Let's get a little bit more specific. Let's talk about what is the issue with fires on Yontif. Is fire permitted to light on Yontif? Is it prohibited? Is it mutter? Is it usser? So, what do you think? Can I ignite a fire? I don't mean transfer a fire. That, of course, is mutter. But could I ignite a fire on, could I kindle a fire on Yontif? Mide, it's asur mide. Everybody assumes that it's asur mide raisa to light a fire on Yontif, which is what I also thought until I learned the sugya. So the Mishnah says like this. We'll learn together, and in about 3 minutes you'll see that it's only going to be asur drabanan. The Mishnah says that you're ein motzin esa ur, one is not. By the way, does anyone know what my name is? My name is Uri. Does anyone know what my name means? Until I was 20 years old, I thought my name means my light. My name is not Uriel. That's a malach. That's not me. My principal in elementary school called me Uriel, and I answered to it, but that wasn't my name. I have no grudges against him. I do remember 17 years later, but I have no grudges. 20, 24 years later, but I have no grudges against him, and I see him, I still smile at him, and he still calls me Uriel, and I still smile and respond. But that's not my name. My name is Uri. Does anyone know what my name means? My light, right? Wrong.
Uri.
That's Uri, of course. What's Uri? My name is not Wake Up. But thank you, I appreciate that. That's always what happens when I sit with my son during the Kabbalah Shabbos and he's like just starting to read and like we get up to Uri Shir Debrei and like, oh Rabbi, that's your name, that's your name. Like, no, that's not my name. What does Uri mean? I'll give you a hint. Ur Kastim. What? Fires of a furnace. Right. So Ur Kastim. That's where do you think the whole Chazal comes from about, there's no reference in Chumash about what happens with Avram being thrown into the furnace. Where do they get this idea of the furnace from? Was there a Masorah? Maybe there's a Masorah. Where is it coming from, the Pesukim? From the word Ur Kastim. Ur means a furnace, a fire. Right. Exactly. And therefore Uri means my fire, my flame, not my light. And therefore with that in mind, now that you all know my name, you can now not call me my name, but at least read the Mishnah. Ein motziim es ha'or, ur. One is not permitted to extract flame, not light, flame. Lo min ha'etzim, lo min ha'avanim, lo min ha'afar. You can't, strike wood against each other, rub wood against each other, or flints against each other to produce flame. What do you have to do? You could, of course, take a flame that's already existent and transfer it from a pre-existing flame to use whatever you do to you. So if you want to light your Yontif candles on the second night, you take your pre-existing flame from the pilot light or from a Yotzeit candle, any light from that, but you can't ignite a flame on Yontif. Why not? Says the Gemara, that's the Mishnah in Beit Zedaf Amud Gimel 33a, and on the next Amud on 33b, the Gemara asks, why can't you ignite, kindle a brand new flame? So the Gemara says, my taima, what's the reason? Answers the Gemara, because it's molded b'yomtif, causing something new on yomtif. That's an Issur d'Rabbanan. Okay, so lighting a new fire on yomtif is mutter midoraisa. Why is it mutter midoraisa? Because ochel nefesh, and which permits, just since you have to cook for, since you have to light a flame for food, you're also permitted to light a flame for other things like heat and like light. Therefore, you are allowed to light a flame. Midoraisa comes to the Issur d'Rabbanan, and the Gemara in Beit Zain says, no, you can't. There's an Issur d'Rabbanan called molid. You can't cause something anew. Where else do we have the halachas of molid? Where else in Hilchos Shabbos do we have the halachas of molid? What can't you do on Shabbos because of molid? What? What about ice? What's the other option? What? Melt ice, right. Making ice is l'maisa mikra hadin is probably mutter. Melting ice, causing it to actively break in a way that will be noticeable, that's usser. Causing ice to be made, to make ice, is that molded? That's a question, but for makom mitzvah, when, for example, you're having guests, let's say you used all the ice in the ice bucket and the ice tray Friday night, when you're having guests for Shabbos lunch, for makom mitzvah, you are permitted to make ice on Shabbos. Because it's a machlokas, the parameters of molid is a machlokas, and therefore b'makom mitzvah one can be meikel, that's meikel hadin, what's the halacha. Yes, so we have this idea of molid. But, even though that's a gemara, that says that the isser is molid, so no one's going to say that lighting a fire on yontif is d'oraisa. Everyone holds this to rabbanan. The gemara sounds like it says, the reason for it is because this isser called molid, I'm creating something new. However, I'm going to read to you a Rambam, and the Rambam sounds like he's ignoring the Gemara and just making up his own reasons. And the Ravid points this out. We know the Rambam wrote his Yaha Chazaka, his Mishnah Torah, and every once in a while the Ravid goes ballistic on him, right? Amar Avraham, this Rambam didn't know what he was talking about, he just ignored explicit Gemara, and this is one of those places. So, and there are times when the words going ballistic is a kind, gentle term. Sometimes the Ravid goes more than ballistic. But he calls them dirty names that I would never call you, and I certainly hope you would never call me. The Ravid feels very comfortable calling the Rambam. But I guess when we were the Ravid, we could call people names like that also. Says the Rambam, listen to this. You're not allowed to light a fire. And he basically quotes the Mishnah as it is, not from wood and not from flintstones, the other flintstones. For example, when you rub them with one against the other, why? Because you're not allowed to light a fire, to ignite a fire on Yontif, because on Yontif you're only allowed to have a fire from a pre-existing flame. And listen to the next five words. Ava lahamtzi esh, but to ignite, to make a new fire, asur, why? How should he finish the sentence? Because that's causing something no anyantif, like the Gemara says. No. What does he say? Shaharei efshe lahamtzi osami ba'erev. You could have your flame from Erev Shabbos. What happens if you have a flame from Erev Shabbos? How long does that stay? A short time or a long time? Yeah? Could you answer the following question? How long did it take Avram Avinu to get from wherever he was going to Akedas Yitzchak? What? 3 days. Good. Anyone who didn't know that should start saying the Akedah, because it's a pasuk, right? In Bereishis. 3 days. And what did he? How did he light the fire when he got to the Akedas Yitzchak, or his plan to light the fire? What was he going to light it with? He had his matchbox. He had his flintstones. What else did he have? Vayikachito esa esh esa machelas. He carried with him esa esh. What's the esh that he carried with him? He carried a coal. He carried a little box, a little lantern box or something with a coal. And how long could that stay lit? A very, 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 very long time. And that's exactly what the Rambam's point is. If you want to have a fire on Yontif, you don't have to light a fire now. If you want something on Yontif, you could do it from before Yontif and have it perfectly fine and fresh, available for your use on Yontif. So why should you do it now? And this is the Rambam's understanding of the Issur D'Rabbanan of lighting a fire. You know why you're not allowed to light a fire at Midrash D'Rabbanan on Yontif? Because you could have done it yesterday. You could have had a coal available from Friday afternoon, and you'd have a heat source available from which you could draw, you know, you touch a cigarette to it, it will light, you touch a match to it, it will light, you touch a candle to it, it will light, and then you take the candle, the matchstick, the cigarette, and do whatever you need to do with it. That's what the Rambam says. Now let's take that logic and apply it to cooking food. Because this is going to be something that's absolutely fabulous that a lot of people don't know about. Actually, we'll talk about that later. Only because it's later in my notes. Well, we'll mention it now, and then we'll maybe get a little bit deeper. The Rambam says the whole reason why you're not allowed to light a fire now is because you could have done it yesterday. So the Rambam understands that all the malachos that you're allowed to do on Yontif is because you couldn't do them yesterday. What happens if you could have done them yesterday? Don't do them on Yontif. So let's think. Could we cook on Friday? I'm sorry, on Erev Yontif? Do you enjoy foods cooked yesterday? I enjoy fresh food. Right? That's why the Rambam says, according to you, it will be usur to cook on Yontif, because you could have done it yesterday. The Rambam says in his beautiful language, ever so beautiful because I appreciate it, that foods taste better when they're fresh. And therefore, you could cook it a week ago. You could serve leftovers 12 times. Some people won't eat it. Why not? Not because, forget about Shabbat Chol Nefesh. Food doesn't taste as better when it's old, when it's a day old. It's not as fresh. And therefore, the whole reason why you're not allowed to light a fire, lighting a fire is just one example, but it's because you couldn't do it. You could have done it yesterday. So why are you lighting a fire now? You could have done it yesterday and kept it cold just like Avraham Avinu kept it cold for 3 days. Well, says the Rambam, same thing with food. You can't cook food yesterday and eat it. You could do it, but it's not going to be fresh. It's not going to be as fresh. And therefore, the Rambam paskins, halacha l'maisa, that the reason why you're allowed to cook food today, even though you could have done it yesterday, is because it's not as fresh. What's going to come out from that is something very significant that no one really knows in Hilchas Yomtif. That if there's a certain kind of food that is equally fresh on Friday or Thursday as it is on Yomtif, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say Friday, I just mean that Erev Yomtif, as it would be if you would cook it on Yomtif itself, according to the Rambam, there's no heter to cook that food on Yomtif. Could you think of a food that tastes equally tasty if it's fresh or if it's not fresh? What? Pizza? Matzah? I don't know. I think fresh baked matzah probably tastes good. You just don't have it too often. But if you toast it, toasted matzah isn't much better than not toast. What's a food that if you eat it 2 days old, it's just as good? Maybe even better. That's actually something I was thinking of soups, especially soups with split peas. Because as split peas disintegrate, it's a thicker, heartier soup. I was thinking about that. I'm scared to say that publicly because that's a gigantic chumrah. But I'm in agreement with you. So in my notes, I wrote uri/? Vegetable soups with split peas. Jello. So Simcha Bunim Kohn, the Art Scroll book on Hilchas Yontif, points out that Jell-O is no different if it's made yesterday or today. In fact, if you make it today, it's not going to be hardened and jello-y. So it's probably better that you did it yesterday. So it got a chance to be cold and hardened like Jell-O is supposed to be. So according to that, one perhaps should not make Jell-O on Yontif. Mishnah Berurah says, Kampot. Kampot tastes better after it's, you cook it yesterday, it stays chilled in the fridge. And, okay, but we'll talk about that a little bit more later, perhaps. When it is mutter, when it's not mutter. What we just did is we just finished the introduction of Hilchas Bishul on Yontif, and we found out that the reason why you're not allowed to light a fire, the Gemara sounds like it's saying because you're creating something new, and the Rambam writes because you could have done it yesterday. Okay. Okay, so now let's get into Hilchas cooking on Yontif. Now we could start. We have 20 minutes left, so we could start this year. Okay, so we said that you can't start a new fire, but you could be mamshich a fire, be ma'avir a fire. Be careful when you listen to what I'm saying, because to be ma'avir is lahavir eish, that's to light a fire. To be ma'avir with an ayin before the bays, that's to transfer a fire. Thank you very much. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam, she'hakol nehiyah b'dvaro. So you could transfer a pre-existing fire to something else, and therefore, if you're lucky enough to live in Washington Heights where you have old stoves that have been outlawed in many other states to have a pilot light, so you can have a stove that is off on Yontif and turn it on, turn the gas on the stovetop on Yontif. Why? Because there's a pre-existing pilot light that's there. When you turn the stove on, you're just being mamshich and eish, you're just drawing a fire from a pre-existing fire, and you're not creating a new fire at all. That only works if you live in an old apartment in Washington Heights that still allows those pilot lights. If you're in most of the other states where these have been outlawed because of various safety issues, then you're not as lucky. I mean, you might be safer, you might live a longer life, but you don't have the convenience of lighting fires on Yontif because all the electric ignition igniters, of course, are creating new fires. That's what the word ignition means. Therefore, you can't turn on a stovetop if it's a non-pilot light. Not only that, but if you have an electric ignition, I'm sorry, let's start with our pilot light. So first of all, on Yontif, in my apartment with the old ovens that most of you have in Washington Heights, you could have a flame that's off. You turn it on, the flame comes extended from the pilot light to the burner. Let's say it's on, you know, low. Could I raise it up to high to get the stuff to a rapid boil? So of course, I'm just getting it bigger. It's a pre-existing fire, I'm just getting it bigger. That's certainly okay. What about doing that same thing by, let's say I have an electric ignition oven. You go back to your parents' house, your uncle's house, your aunt's house, for Yontif, your friend's house, and they have an electric ignition oven, stovetop, and the fire's on, because you can't turn it on Yontif. So the fire's on. Once it's on, are you allowed to make it bigger? You'd argue that presumably, by making a fire bigger, you're taking a pre-existing fire and just making it bigger. That's a nice idea, but that's not how electrical ovens work. I mean, it could be yours does work, you have to do the research, but there are many electric ovens that every setting is not just more of the same, it's a new circuit. And therefore, when you turn the setting, the temperature settings, or the high, medium, low, you're not just, again, you have to see how your oven works, but there are many ovens that the different settings are not just more or less gas, like by the pilot ovens, the one that I have, the old ones, but some of them work with completely new, different settings are new circuits of electricity, and therefore one would not be able to, unless you know how your oven works, to raise the flame if it will cause a new circuit to be created. So check into your ovens when you find out, when you get home, and see what kind of oven you have. Okay, so now I turned on the oven. Let's talk about the flame, the burner. Some of them yes, some of them no. Let's talk about a different issue. Let's say I have food inside the oven, not on the stovetop, but inside the oven. So can I open the door of the oven? Well, on Shabbos, can I do that? What happens? On Shabbos, you have, when we have an oven that's set for, let's say, 350. No, let's say 350 is to cook. So you have it on 250 to keep something warm. And there's a thermometer gauge inside your oven that keeps at 250. When you open the door, what happens? Cold air rushes in. And the way the oven works, it doesn't keep it on a low flame continuously. there's a flame there. When it gets to 255, 260, the flame turns off. When it goes down to 240, it flicks it back on to keep an average range of about 250. So that means when you open the oven door, what's really happening? Maybe the oven is off. Maybe the flame is off. You're allowing the cold air to rush in. You're causing you're not lighting the fire, but you're causing the fire to ignite. That's called a psik resha. When you do something, you didn't intend to do this act, but it ends up happening. Psik resha of an issa d'oraisa is asr. So that on Shabbos, when lighting a fire is asr d'oraisa, you're doing a psik resha, an automatic causation, by opening the door of the oven, and you're causing the fire to go on. That's kabbi asr. So if you have an oven that's on Shabbos, you're not allowed to open the front door. You're not allowed to open the door of the oven. On Yontif, however, things are a little bit different. Based on what we just learned 5-10 minutes ago, that lighting a fire on Yontif is only midah. Lighting a fire on Yontif is only midah rabbanan. So what am I dealing with? I'm talking about a psik resha on a derabbanan. What's the psik resha? What's the derabbanan? Let's say I have my oven on Yontif set for 250. I open it. Let's say it's off right now. I open the door. What happens? Air rushes in, and I cause, again, I don't light a fire, but I cause a fire to be lit. That's grama. That's an indirect action. I don't go and light the fire. I'm causing it to be lit. That's grama. That's indirect causation. And what is there was being done through this act of grama, through this indirect causation? And it's that itself is only midrabanan. And why am I doing it? To eat on Yontif. Tzarech mitzvah. So what do we have? We have a psik resha, derabanan, for malkum mitzvah, and therefore on Yontif it is permitted to open the ovens even if the flame is off right now, and you will cause the flame to go on because of your opening the door. Why? Because you're doing it indirectly, that's grama. B. Psik resha. Right, and the whole history of lighting a fire in the first place is only derabanan on Yontif, as we pointed out, because midorais it's mutter because of achol nefesh. And thirdly, but malkum mitzvah, we have this again, psik resha on a derabanan, but malkum mitzvah, that will be mutter. Now you know why you can open your oven. However, keep in mind, some ovens, like my parents, have a light that tells you if the flame is on or not on, and that you have to deal with a different issue in terms of causing light, and we're not going to go into what to do with lights. I'm just talking about the oven, the flames themselves. Any questions about this point? Or points that we talked about in terms of raising the flames, lighting the flames, causing the flame to be lit? Any questions? No? Okay, so now that we talked about raising a flame, let's talk about turning down a flame or putting out a flame. When we say that we know on Shabbos is just like there's an issur of havara, of lighting, of kindling a flame, there's also an issur d'oraisa of mechabeh, of kibui, of extinguishing a flame. Now, the parameters of extinguishing are not just putting out a fire. Also, making a fire smaller is also, I think, an issur d'oraisa, if I remember correctly, I think. Making a fire smaller is also going to be an issur d'oraisa. But, of course, on Yontif, it might only be, I think it's only also d'rabbanan on Yontif. However, we know that if you're doing something for food, you're allowed to do it on Yontif, certain things. So, for example, let's say I have a flame right now I just finished cooking, and I have my flame on my stovetop. I don't need it because it was cooking the soup or the meatballs, and now I've served my meatballs, so I don't want this flame. Could I turn it down? Well, it's not for cooking purposes, so I'm not permitted to turn the flame down at all. What happens if my meatballs are not yet ready to be served? It's another half an hour till lunch. They finished cooking, and they're on a really high flame because I wanted to bring it to a boil. And what do you have to do after you bring something to a boil? You want it to simmer now, to simmer a little bit. The soup, so it says, bring it to a rapid boil and then let it simmer. If I leave it boiling, the bottom's just going to burn to a toast. I don't want to serve toast. I want to serve meatballs. So there, I will be able to lower the flame, because why am I lowering the flame? For the ochel nefesh itself, for the purpose of having that food the way I want it. Now here it gets a little bit sticky. What I just said is something that many people have heard before. What I'm going to add is a qualification that I never heard of before, perhaps might be new to you as well. Rav Shlomo Zalman points out that which we're concerned about, that your food is going to be burnt, it doesn't mean if you have, let's say, a liquidy soup, and it's boiling, right? And if you leave it on a high flame for another 20 minutes, it's not gonna, it'll be a little more will boil out, or the meatballs might become a little bit, you know, thicker on the bottom, but it's not actually gonna get really burnt. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman says, if you want to lower a flame, it's only gonna be permitted if the food that's on there, that's on that high flame that you're nervous about, is really gonna get burnt or dried out in a significant way. That's a chomer that I never heard from Shlomo Zalman Orbach. If it will get really dried out or burnt for real, that's when you're allowed to turn it down. But if you just want to turn it down because it's just you like it more when it simmers than when it boils, then oh yeah, okay, if it's not supposed to boil, it's supposed to simmer now. That's not enough. You're only allowed to turn down a fire, and this is something to be very wary of, because I don't think people are aware of this, that you should only turn fires down if it will really burn whatever's there or really dry out whatever's there. But if it'll just, it's not great, that's not sufficient grounds for ochel nefesh purpose of turning down a fire. Yeah. This is anything. This is any fire, right? Nothing to do with pilot light or not pilot light. I'm sorry? I don't know. I didn't research it. Rabbi Neuberg gave a shiur to the smicha students about this topic, and this is what he presented as the way to go. Could there be other opinions? I am not aware. I don't know. Okay, great. So we'll talk about that in a minute. We'll talk about that in a minute. If you want to turn down a fire for danger purposes. So I did hear that as a good way to solve this problem, to boil up some water there, and therefore you don't want the water to all boil out. So if it's going to stay on this high flame, it's all just going to boil out, and you're going to be left with nothing. Not going to burn. It's not going to dry out. It's just going to be less, and that might be a way to lower the flame. I did hear that in the past. I didn't research it. I did hear that in the past. I can't comment more than that. The reason why Reb Shlomo Zalman says you shouldn't turn it down is because, unless it's going to burn, of course, is why are you turning it down? Because you want it to simmer? Well, I have a better idea. What happens when something's on a high flame? It's very hot. So what happens if you don't want it to be so hot? What should you do? Turn down the flame? I have a better idea.
Take it off.
Yeah, take it off the fire. Why should you leave it there and have to turn it down? Just take it off the fire. But let's say you're serving the meal in 20 minutes, and leaving it on the fire is not going to be able to stay hot if you take it off the fire. So if you do want to leave it on the flame, then you will be able to permit it to lower it and let it simmer on the flame, even if it won't really dry out. In other words, we're worried about drying out we're worried about drying out when you're not in a situation of the meal being in half an hour for 20 minutes and you want to keep it warm. But if something is, you're not in that situation and you just want to turn it down so that something doesn't burn, then it has to really burn. Another important thing to keep in mind that, again, I never heard of and I think is not known, we said that given that something will indeed burn, but you do want to keep it there to keep it hot for their meal, so you can turn it off. You can lower it, I'm sorry. You can't turn it off, but you could lower it. The Mishnah Berurah actually writes that, how many stovetops do we have? We have four, right? And I have the meatballs on the back right. Okay, the back right stovetop. And it's very high. So what should I do? I should lower it. Why? Because I don't want my food to burn. The Mishnah Berurah says, I have a better idea. Instead of lowering it to prevent your food from burning, it is more lechatchila to light a second small flame than to lower the big flame that you have to a smaller flame. That's what the Mishnah Berurah paskins. It's better to light a new small fire, meaning to draw a new small fire, than to lower a big fire. And that's not so convenient, because that means you're now going to have two flames burning for the duration of Yantif. It happens to be Rav Moshe Feinstein is Mako that you don't have to light the smaller one, but it seems the way Rabbi Neuberger presented it, that the minhag is to yes be machmir, and if a person is going to lower a flame, it is so that something doesn't burn, it is more lechatchila to light a second flame that will be a small flame in the first place than to lower a big flame. Questions? Everything that I'm saying is obviously we're not dealing with something that's based on new electric circuits. Whenever it's just adjusting the gas, raising or lowering the gas, then that's what we're talking about now. If there's going to be a circuit involved, creating a new circuit or a different circuit, which some electric ovens have, then we're not going into different settings, which might use different circuitry. There are two issues. One is the ignition itself, and then a separate issue is once you have a flame, how do you have a higher or lower flame? So every pilot, anything that has a pilot light will probably not have any electricity. Anything that does have that has electric ignition, it can have only electric ignition, but you're just adding more or less gas when you adjust the height of the flame. Or there could be both electric ignition and in different electrical settings. Right, so for example, if it's let's leave it at that. Okay. Rav Heinemann, the Star K, has come out with something called the Shabbos Mode Oven. Shabbos Mode Oven basically is an oven that you could use. Let's start with this. A little while ago, legislation was passed in many states that said that ovens have to have an automatic turnoff after 12 hours. That's great if you don't keep Yontif. It's less great. I mean, it's great because it's safe. And why in the world would any normal person have a fire on for more than 12 hours? Unfortunately, people who keep Yontif often do have fires on for more than 12 hours, and therefore they have to figure out when they buy an oven how to get around that. So Rav Heinemann created a Shabbos mode switch on General Electric and perhaps some other models, in conjunction with the engineers, and he himself is a brilliant, even just technical person, not just a halachic person, and they figured a way to not have that 12-hour shutoff. That's one aspect of a Shabbos mode. Another aspect of a Shabbos mode oven is that it enables the person to adjust the settings on the. Of course, it turns off the keypad, which is great because you could make adjustments without making any digital readouts differ or change. And he allowed the potential for adjusting the settings on the oven by not having your actions do it directly, rather through the aid of Grumov. We used the word Grumov before, but indirect causation. In other words, the way he set up the electrical circuit in those Shabbos mode settings is that when you change it from, off to 250 or from 250 to 350, your action does nothing. Your action just puts a peg somewhere. Then there's a cycle that goes around, and then 3 seconds later, it notices, oh, there's a change in my route, and it says, oh, let me act based on that change that I just found. So what did I do? I just put something in the electric circuit's route. And then the electric circuit, as it cycled through and it got to that point, said, oh, I noticed a change, let me react to that change. That, Rav Moshe Heinemann says, is considered a grama. And therefore, since it's a grama on something that's also derabbanan anyway, and the tzorach mitzvah, we could be mekel and we could have these adjustments, these electric adjustments, in our oven. I urge you to speak to your rabbanim what they hold about the status of Shabbos mode ovens, about this kula of Rav Moshe Heinemann, just so that you know if any of you are comfortable with the Psakim of the Rosh Yeshivas here at Yeshiva University. The poskim here at Yeshiva University do not accept Rav Moshe Heinemann's understanding of grama, and therefore do not accept his tikkunim and his Shabbos mode ovens that GE makes. And that is because your coin is causing that indirect grama. You built a system that takes into account that things, you do something, you pick it up 2 seconds later and change whatever you have based on that thing that you inputted. That's not something that was indirect that just happened to happen. You did it practically directly, all the other poskim say. What's grama? Grama is when I do this and then something happens to come from left field and causes it to occur. For example, I open the oven door. What happens? Cold air from the window blows in and makes the oven go on or off. That's grama. That's indirect. But to press a button and then you built into that same unit a cycle that will notice that thing which I just did 3 seconds earlier, that's grama? That's the argument that many poskim reject in Moshe Heinemann's chiddush in terms of the Shabbos mode ovens, and therefore, before you, I'm not telling you what to do in your house if your parents have already bought the ovens, but when you do buy your ovens, and there are Shabbos mode ovens, which certainly sound like it makes life much easier, please speak to your local Orthodox rabbi to see what his position about Shabbos mode ovens are. Let's finish off with, instead of talking just about fires, we could actually start talking about Hilchos cooking on Yantif. Yeah. Thank you. The Shabbos mode oven has different components. One of them is that there's no 12-hour shutoff. That's wonderful. Another is that there are no readouts. That's wonderful. Another is that it uses this grama. The grama heter is only a mutter on Yantif, when there's only this drabbanon of lighting a fire anyway. On Shabbos, where lighting a fire is asur doraisa, then grama will not help you. The grama on doraisa will not be a redeeming factor. So we should call it a Yantif mode, right? Not a Shabbos mode. Thank you. Let's finish off with one question, with one more point that we mentioned earlier. I just want to read to you the Rambam that earlier we mentioned that the Rambam explained. We said, why is it usher to light a fire on Yantif? We said, because when you light a fire, you're causing something new. That was what the Gemara seemed to say. The Rambam says, no, why can't you light a fire? Because you could have done it yesterday. Why do it today? Let me read to you the Rambam applying that concept to cooking, because I think it's very important to understand how he understands fresh food and not fresh food. It's important for us to realize, to be appropriate connoisseurs of what good food means, and at least especially when it comes to Yantif, where it's a mitzvah to eat. So says the Rambam, you're allowed to shecht, you're allowed to cook on Yantif. This is the Rambam in Hilchas Yantif, the first parak, halacha ches. She'im asal elu mi'erev Shabbos, mi'erev Yantif, Yesh b'kach hefsed o chisaron ta'am. If you did it a day earlier, it's either going to not be as fresh. Remember, if you didn't have refrigeration, you shechted something yesterday, so you're dealing with something that was out of the refrigerator, meat that was out of the refrigerator for a day, it's probably still edible, but it's not fresh. If you have cucumbers that you buy on Tuesday, on Wednesday they're not the same as they were on Tuesday. Says the Ram, so too, hot fresh bread is not the same like it was yesterday, and food that was cooked and meat that was shefted today is better than it was yesterday. And therefore, based on that, the Shulchan Aruch does paskin that anything that you could do yesterday, l'chatchila, you should do yesterday. So now let's talk about, I could have done it yesterday. I could have made my jello on Erev Yantif. We're going to finish with this halacha. I could have made my jello on Erev Yantif. And I didn't make it on Erev Yantif. Why not? I just didn't make my jello on Erev Yantif. What do you want? Yantif and I want to make jello now. Can I make jello? So based on what I said so far, it sounds like, hey, the only reason why it's mutter is because you could have done it yesterday, because you couldn't do it yesterday to be really fresh, so you had to do it today. So jello you could have done yesterday, so don't make jello today. That's where we're standing right now. However, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah says in Hilchos Yantif, Taf Tzadi Hei, 495, the very first Sif, the Ramah concludes, the Shulchan Aruch, I'm sorry, or the Ramah, I'm not sure, concludes that if you didn't get to make the, if you didn't make the jello yesterday, and I'm just using jello as an example of something that you could have equally done yesterday, it would have been just as tasty, and now you want to make jello, says the Shulchan Aruch, you can make it on Yom Tov if you make the jello with a shinoi. You make the compote with a shinoi. This is a halach that I don't think anybody knows, except for you now. So if you have anything that you could have cooked just as easily before Yantif, and you didn't, Yantif comes and you want to have it, are you stuck? A little bit, not really. Do it, but do it with a shinoi. How do you make jello with a shinoi? Well, how do you make jello? I'm not that fat. Okay, so you take boiling water, and you pour it into a bowl, and then you shake the jello mix into it, right? So I have an idea. First pour the jello mix into the bowl, and then pour the hot water onto it. That could be a shinoi, perhaps. You have to mix jello so that it doesn't get clumpy, right? You mix it, so instead of mixing it, circle, 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 do crisscross. Right? Those are different shinoim, perhaps. This Mishnah Berurah doesn't say that. He doesn't talk about jello. But I'm just giving you the concepts of shinoim that appear in other aspects of Hilchos Shabbos. Those things are considered shinoim. Let's say you had time before Yantif and you had time before Yantif. I never have time before Shabbos. I'm always a few minutes late to Mincha on Erev Shabbos, but Baruch Hashem, here in our shul, we always start Mincha a few minutes late, so everything works out well. Even then, it doesn't always work out to my favor, but if you didn't have time before Yontif, then the Mishabura says clearly, you are permitted to make the jello on Yontif. Could you make jello on an Erev Yontif? You can make a jello on an Erev Yontif, but if you know what my house looks like on Erev Yontif, you would not be able to make jello on an Erev Yontif. And therefore, you will be able to make jello on Yontif, even without a Shinui, if you didn't have a chance before Yontif. In other words, whether the Shulchan Aruch says that you have to, you can do it on Yontif, but make sure you do a Shinui, because you could have done it on Yontif, that's if you really could have done it, you really had time and didn't. But if you didn't have time, which I think is almost all the case, always the case, certainly Erev Pesach, when, you know, everything's crazy, and Erev Sukkos also, because you have to fix up the Sukkah, and you also, things are always crazy. Do you ever realize that your lights are usually set up in the Sukkah like within like 25 minutes before Sukkos actually starts? It's not just me, right? Okay. And to finish, the Shmir Shabbos Kilchas deals with a question. A very simple question based on what we just learned. Does boiling water for my tea or my coffee have to be fresh? I've heard of fresh roasted coffee. Did you ever hear of fresh boiled water? No, you haven't. You could say no. No, you never heard of fresh boiled water. Why? Because water tastes no different whether it was boiled 3 days ago and stayed on in your pump pot for 3 days, or your urn for 3 days, or it was just boiled up this morning. According to this logic, when should you have to put up your water? Erev Yontif. You shouldn't be able to put on Yontif. And if you put on Yontif, put on with Hashini. I don't know how you're going to do that. Oh, yeah, I know. Put a pot on the flame, put the kettle on the flame, and then fill it with water. That would be a Shina, right? So it says the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa, no. When it comes to water, that you don't have to, you're allowed to boil up water on Yontif. You don't have to say, oh, it's like gel I could have done before Yontif, because if you had water up before Yontif, the Svara that you said earlier, it would boil out, or would become less. And therefore, that's A. And B, if you had the fire on before Yontif, it would cost money to keep it hot for the past day or two, whatever it is, hours or half a day or day, and therefore you would be losing that money, and therefore there's nothing wrong with it is permitted to boil water afresh, anew, on Yontif, even though you could, you could just have easily done it before Yontif. Hopefully, all of these halachas will come in handy, and we should all have a wonderful, wonderful Yontif. A Yontif, we should all have our personal geulas, geula for Klal Yisrael, and we should be zocha to benisim nigalu, benisim asin ligal, and it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan right now, and we should all take some cake and some fruit and enjoy the mitzvah, simchas Rosh Chodesh, and chag kasher sameach.